Yeah, I think I do.
Journalist, TV producer, novelist, and 21st century Newcastle man. It's Ian Lennox.
Yes, exactly. You see, we're rolling all the jingles out and left, right and centre. In fact, it's only Hannah who hasn't actually got one, but then it's her only if it's her first show. You know, time will out. Join our club. Well, why would you want to join Newcastle United? Hold that thought, Ian, because we actually need to break this breaking news about our culinary correspondent and master chef guru, who I was going to congratulate, of course, for his recent Waitrose success, William Sitwell. Claire, would you like to deliver the shocking news?
I can do. He has said, "Morning, I'm afraid I dropped and smashed my phone last night while cycling and it was run over by a taxi for good measure, so I won't be able to address the people of Lincoln this morning. Huge apologies." We're very sad.
Yeah.
William, if you're listening to the podcast, it just will not be the same without you. We'll have to spend more time on irritable bowel syndrome as opposed to
food. It's a kind of ironic link there,
isn't it? The kind of decisions that they used to make regularly at the Tyne Tees news programmes, and Ian said, well, what do we do? More irritable bowel syndrome, or should we actually do another feature on northeastern writers?
I hope no one's eating their breakfast right now. Apologies.
Yeah. We put that positivity out there. And does watching Newcastle United give you a case of IBS? Ian, welcome to the programme. How are you, sir?
None the better for speaking to you if it's going on like this.
Listen, I thought you'd be delighted to celebrate the success of the sole English representative in the Champions League that still continues to sort of fly the flag for the country.
Yes, it's quite interesting, isn't it? And they're going to sack him.
Yes, well, exactly.
They're really well towards him, haven't they? You've taken the club further than anybody else has ever done before. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, goodbye.
Well, exactly. It's the way forwards. That's the
important. Well, he certainly showed more dignity and class about the whole thing than they did, didn't he?
Well, obviously he's learning from Rafa Benitez and company. It's nice to have 1 point out of 12. Let's not talk football, because do they do football in Harwich, by the way, Hannah? Or is it something that you just think, no, don't do this. What is this game of which you speak?
Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of football, but there is a Harwich and Parkston football team near where I live.
I don't know how they do. We could adopt them. We don't know how they do, but we could formally actually take on board the Harwich and Parkston football team.
I used to go and watch a sort of little local Sunday league team. I used to find it very amusing that they used to shout things like, "Think about it, think about it." Think about what?
Look, Ian, you should know they were probably composed of existential philosophers. So we're thinking, is this a ball? Is it not a ball? Am I actually here? Am I not here?
There is such a thing as a credibility gap.
Well, I don't know what you could be saying there. I mean, we're only separated geographically by a little over 186 miles, Ian. So
there was a football once called Socrates, wasn't there?
Yeah, exactly, precisely. Yeah. And he had a major philosophical sort of variety of things. Meanwhile, what do you think Ian's going to make of this week's Cameron Tilbury musical selection, Claire?
I think he'll actually quite like it. Oh. I think that it's kind of a little bit road trippy.
Yeah.
It's not like very twangy.
You don't see Ian as a twangy person.
No, I don't think Ian floats his boat with the twanginess.
Oh.
I think he'll quite like it. Yeah. Quite rate it.
Tessa, I mean, you heard it last night, first time.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think so too, because it's more, I would say, rock country.
Yes.
More rock country.
I would say he would like it a lot.
Not for paleontologists.
It's not really deep south, is it?
You don't think Ian's a deep south person?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's a deep south
person. Am I allowed to have an opinion of my opinion?
We're just talking about him in the third
person. Just
tell him what he likes.
I've been patronised before, this is ridiculous.
Ian, as Jenny Finch, a crime writer, would say, we only do it because we care about you. That's important.
That's
the key thing. And I can't ask Hannah because she hasn't heard it. She's in the same position as yourself, and Ian, Hannah Brown is making her debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, so she's just getting a flavour of seasoned pros like your good self, Richard Fitzwilliams and Sarah Huntley, how you effortlessly just come into this level of massive sort of journalistic cynicism and still continue on. It's great. It's called Rock On, and it's by Tucker Bethard. But spelt beat hard.
Yes.
Very confusing. We officially liked it last night, but that should not influence you in any way, shape or form, Ian, and it probably won't.
It won't.
fanning your own way didn't take too long. I should have put a rock on. Baby, rock on. Yeah, I should have put a rock on. Yeah, baby, rock on. Yeah, I really did mean it.
And when you have a line, I saw you, or hashtag digging on some new dude. I mean, what's not to appreciate about that? You know, it's a bit like looking at Ollie and Oboe on Ian's shoulder. So I think that's Ollie. Although it could be Oboe.
He looks so chilled.
He could have been listening to the wonderful Rock On with Mr. Bethard. But, Ian, what did you make of... In fact, no, hold that thought, Ian. We'll come to Hannah first. Ladies first, what did you make of Tucker Bethard?
I quite liked it, yeah.
Okay.
It was quite nice.
Ian, font of wisdom, negativity and cynicism. what is the line from your own point of view? Who obviously...
He's an American, is he? He's not some sort of youth from sage from Clapham or something.
Well, could well be, could be, but no.
You had a fantasy, he's in fact a hillbilly somewhere in Tennessee or something.
How often are you wandering through the streets of Clapham and you find people having hillbilly fantasies? Oh, Lord, it's like getting to Brixton Town Hall and thinking, what's going on here? Yeah. Anyway, down the telephone line, always good for quality reception. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was fine. I wouldn't write to my mother about it.
Okay then, but your mother is she? Is she, yeah, exactly. Got fine. Let's quit while we're ahead. Is what you're saying, Tessa? Yeah. Perfectly okay. So, Ian, it falls to your good self now because we cut you short last week because I had to go off and deliver a session. You've got a few moments to quiz Hannah Brown on her experiences as a lass from Harwich. Yes, that's Harwich, England. In Lincoln, doing her journalism degree, like Tessa, same year, etc. But this is her first Midweek Drive Morning Edition. So, Ian, the floor is now yours to quiz Hannah on how it feels like not only being deputy for the somewhat poorly Emily Jones. Get well, Emily. But then again, now we've got Hannah. Who needs you?
Poor Emily.
Ian, the interview is over to you. Go, sir.
Right, Hannah. Are you a first year or second year or third year?
I'm a first year, yeah.
First year. Why did you decide to go on to the radio station?
Well, it was actually quite a surprise more to me. Yesterday I had a news day and I came to interview Alex. And before I even got a question out to interview him, he was interviewing me and asking, when are you going to come on the radio? What are you doing tomorrow morning? And so here I am.
Right.
it's a new strategy, you see. You get the interviewees to effectively start getting it precisely.
I mean,
did you ever get to interview Alex? Did you ever get to interview Alex?
Yes, I did. I got a good quote, so made my bulletin in time.
Right.
It all went well.
As I say, rent a quote could be my middle sort of action from that point of view. I'll talk about the whole thing. Good start, Ian. Sorry, you've still got a few minutes. Do you want to actually chat a bit more?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, I think it's... when I was teaching at Sunderland, media studies students, I used to tell them that although, you know, there were obviously a lot of friends in the class and everything, they were in fact competing against each other for jobs eventually.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very good thing, Hannah, by showing some initiative to extend your sort of, well, your work at the university to doing practical work like this. And when you eventually come before employers for interviews, the more initiative you've shown during your time at university, the better it is for you. And if I was an employer, I would be looking for people not necessarily to get academic results, because I don't believe journalism is a particularly academic subject, although they dress it up as such. But people who I think would get a story when other people wouldn't. And if people like yourself who show a little bit of initiative would be going towards the head of the queue.
Every single interview I've had since, like, in the last couple of months, they've always asked about Siren. Like, that's pretty much the first thing they go to on my CV. And they ask me, like, how I get involved in it.
As a midweek driver.
It's not so much about your degree anymore. It's about what you do.
No. What you should also do is get every single chance you get to take work experience at things. Mm. I know it can be financially difficult, but I basically it's just a matter of the employer is looking for somebody who thinks can do the job, and somebody. I mean, one of the most important things about being a journalist is the ability to get stories, obviously, and to people who show initiative.
And Sage Words Claire, of course, doing a proper academic degree in English. I'm sorry, I'm kidding. No, actually, I'm not going to rise to Ian's bait about Joe, because we work very hard.
Yes, you already have, brother.
No, well, it's okay, we can work our way through that process, and besides, his team play my team in a couple of weeks' time, so I don't want to...
will open a can of worms, won't it?
Do we give them the 3 points? It's very challenging, but still. Ian,
it is, isn't it, really?
I think it's time for Claire to bowl those last two questions, because obviously first show Hannah doesn't have the stress of knowing those, because it would be too much.
No.
But
you might. It'd be nice to her.
But yeah, exactly.
Thank
so
you.
Go, Claire.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Ian?
I have indeed.
Good. And will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so, especially if Manchester Newcastle win.
Who are they playing?
Oh, the week after Manchester City, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some team represents the community, Richard.
Look, it may well be, if things go continuing 1 point out of every four games, that you'll be playing Harwich and their sort of fine sides. Which would be nice, you could actually meet each other halfway through, maybe in the conference somehow.
I think long before then we'll be taken over by some multi-billionaire and we'll buy a team for us, like a certain other team.
And how quickly are Ollie and Obo, the cats, Ian?
Yes, they're only limiting themselves about three Wall of Death games a day around the house now.
That's all we need. We will be
one just attacked the carrier bag while I was listening to music.
Yes,
a wealth of distraction.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, music to actually get your cats to attack carrier bags with.
Now I've got to go and feed them.
Well, go for it, Ian. Enjoy the day. After the news, we'll be speaking to Hilary Jones, Professor Ingvar Bjarnason, and Louis Savvy. We'll also be running some of those John Wenham Events Guide things. Ooh, sensational. Staying with us, Claire?
Yes.
Staying with us, Tessa?
I am.
Staying with us, Hannah?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
It's frequent, now that is love. Beat me up with your love. I could feel this way, and I've got to say, I just don't get it. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it back.
Having spoken with Garrett Wong, of course, when he wasn't being Ensign Harry Kim in the Star Trek Voyager series, he was very keen to say what a wonderful thing the photonic doctor was, the holographic doctor, etc. I said, Harry, or indeed Ensign Kim, we're only seconds away from actually manifesting that in Britain, because we can say, yes, he has become fully digitalised in every sense of the word, the ideal dream of holographic doctors the world over. Dr. Hilary Jones is now officially available and digitised. Dr. Hilary, how are you?
Alex, I'm fine. What an intro.
Well, I just thought it is. It's the Star Trek Voyager scenario just come to life, really. Finally, you can. And also, your bedside manner is infinitely better than that of, obviously, Dr. Zimmerman. But there we are. So share with us this whole notion of clearly the notion of possibly dealing with the question, how are you, with respect to folk, etc. How has this developed in terms of possibly a digital version of your good self?
Right. So the One You campaign is the latest big health campaign coming out of Public Health England, the educational arm of the NHS. And what they've done is they've created 9 digital bus stops around the country, which have interactive video screens. Now, I appear on the video screen as people are waiting for their bus, whiling away some time, and I'm encouraging them to engage with me. There's a camera behind the screen which has facial recognition, so we can recognize if somebody's male or female and roughly middle-aged. And if they are, the screen will talk to them and encourage them to use a phone number where they get a message from me about thinking about small changes today that will help them to stay healthy in the future down the line. And we can direct them towards something called the How Are You Quiz. Now, this is a free online quiz which anyone around the country can do. Just go online to the How Are You Quiz. And it asks questions about their lifestyle, diet, drinking, smoking, exercise, sleep, stress, etc. And we give them a personalised score and then personalised advice about how they could make small changes. Because what we know is that people are definitely living longer today, but they're living longer when they get to the age of 70 or 80 with a combination of conditions, some of which in the past would have been fatal. And so we don't want them to live longer and be unwell. We want them to live longer and be healthy, and that's perfectly possible. And we know that 800,000 people have already engaged in this How Are You quiz and made changes which are making a real difference already.
Well, you've actually identified the fact that these numbers are changing and so on. I was quite shocked to find that there are a fifth of all adults in the East Midlands still smoke, 2/3 are classed as overweight or obese, and 17% of drinkers consume over 21 units of alcohol per week. It seems as though, as well as how are you, you should also have a slightly more scolding thing saying, please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Well, absolutely. Look, if I said to you that being overweight can reduce your life expectancy by an average of 3 years, but being very overweight can take 8 to 10 years off your life, which is the equivalent of the effects of lifelong smoking. So in a way, morbid obesity has become the new smoking in terms of public health damage. That's really an important message. Alcohol misuse costs the NHS about $3.5 billion every year. We get about 22,500 deaths from alcohol-related disease in the UK every year and 330,000 admissions. So By getting people to go to the tracker, for example, the drinks tracker, to keep an eye on how much they're consuming, we can give them daily tips, we can give them feedback and encourage them to make small changes which will make a massive difference in the future.
And in terms of the location of these places where people can interact with your good self, I love the way you said roughly middle age. That's very good. I mean, it might include myself, it might not. It's roughly in that sort of area.
What age are we talking about?
Oh, I couldn't possibly comment on this particular sort of thing.
Should we say between 35 and 60?
Yeah, I think that's fine. That's good. That's good. Good for me. So where exactly can they be located if people want to interact with you from that perspective?
Well, we've got them in different places with a good geographical split around the country. So we've got Brighton, Portsmouth, Bristol, Swindon, Coventry, Leeds, Middlesbrough, Norwich, Peterborough. But of course, as I say, in regional newspapers and pharmacies, you can find more details about the How Are You quiz, how to get it. I mean, it's free of charge. Everything's free. That's the beauty of all this. And I think if people take more responsibility for their health, when I think they want to, they can really improve how they feel and how they're going to be not just 5 years down the line, but 15, 20, 25 years as well.
I love the way you've actually included Middlesbrough in terms of that, because that was one of the towns that, of course, was in the news a wee while ago for actually having a response to people who actually littered in the streets saying, pick that up now, pick that up now. So it's very good. It's not Big Brother. It's more fun than that from that.
It's got to be fun. Look, I think health, nobody wants didactic messages saying you must not do this. Then people rebel and do the opposite. But I think, this is in your interest. It's not for us. But you can actually have a better quality of life and a healthier life. You can breathe easier, not have heart disease, not have diabetes. I can't think of anything negative about it.
Absolutely, and certainly that whole notion of the question, how are you? You want to know how I am? You can go on forever and ever with respect to the whole thing. You could have a psychological sort of aspect as well from that perspective.
And how are you really?
Exactly.
How are you really?
Yes.
Not just how are you?
Wonderful.
I'm okay. I'm fine. How are you really?
This seems very much part and parcel of a really innovative campaign that's working through that. How does it compare with other countries? I mean, are we ahead of the game in this? Because it does seem to be quite new and novel.
I think other countries, compared to other countries in Europe, we have a bigger obesity problem. Smoking, alcohol, probably much on a par. But the obesity thing really is a worry, and it's partly because there's so much freely available, accessible, cheap, unhealthy food, and it's thrust in front of us all the time on TV, adverts everywhere, and we've just got to be better at protecting people from those temptations, all the time, and getting people to make healthier choices, to be more physically active and have fun with life, engage in the things that are healthier, and will keep them away from the doctor's surgery.
and the digital bus stops, do you think, as I say, it is literally just a step before we actually start moving into that direction of fully programmable, holographic Dr. Hillary Jones's running the country in many ways?
Oh, what a scary thought. You know, no, you'd certainly want to get away from me. No, I think it's just the occasional encouragement. Oh, yeah, that he's just reminded me, she's just reminded me that actually I could live a healthier lifestyle and have a better life as a result in terms of keeping in tip-top condition. Because there's nothing like feeling fit and healthy and having normal weight and loads of energy. That's what people want more than anything else when they come to my surgery, more energy to do all the things they want to do. And a part of that is just making some adjustments in how you live your everyday life, because modern-day life can be extremely stressful and give you all the anxiety and tensions that lead you to unhealthy habits. So we can steer people away from that.
Indeed, the keywords quality of life, and regular listeners will know we've regularly been hammering the baton for sugar being the new nicotine and other sort of issues to actually ensure that's worked through, as well as obviously coenzyme Q10. Public Health England, of course, doing some sensational stuff here. A reminder, Hillary, of the web address that people could actually go to take that online How Are You
Just
Health
go
quiz.
Online to One You Quiz or How Are You Quiz, and you'll be there.
As ever, it's been a sheer delight, almost unparalleled.
Cheers. Have a good day.
Excellent. So there we are. How would you feel, Claire, if you're standing at a bus stop and suddenly Dr. Hillary Jones pops up and says, hello, how are you?
I'd be quite excited, I think. It'd be quite a spicing up your day.
Mm. How are you really? How is it? How's it going to work? What's the whole sort of message that's coming through there? What do we mean by that? Let's go to the events diary. Lincoln Theatre Royal next week. No, actually, 22nd of April. It's next week.
Don't scare me like that. Please.
Yeah. Anyway. Rummage at the Royal. Roll up, roll up. It's a car boot sale. A car boot sale at the Theatre Royal? What are they thinking? But yes, it's inside, it's outside, and it's a beautiful historical theatre as well. Rummage at the Royal, or if you want to roll your R's, Rummage at the Royal, is a vast sale of some of the props, furniture and costumes that have appeared on stage with star names throughout the United Kingdom. Antiques to retro to modern furniture props, which will intrigue you, and everyday is essentials to delight. Costumes are available from Victorian costumes to uniforms to present day clothes in all sizes.
It's very exciting.
And a vast array of goodies, a must for fans and collectors, bargain hunters. All proceeds are going to the Lincoln Theatre Royal. So there we are. That's a Rummage at the Royal, car boot sale inside.
Oh, that's good.
Specialised, exactly. So, you know, where are the weather worries there? On the 22nd of April and the 23rd of April, which, of course, is St. George's Day.
It's also my dog's birthday.
And Shakespeare as well. Who's not your dog, as far as I believe.
My dog is Shakespeare. Did you not know this? All of the plays. Conspiracy theory.
These are the kind of things that clearly, you know, if we didn't, we now do. So once again, revelations, 16 and a half minutes past 9 o'clock on Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio service. A situation where 1.4 million people in the United Kingdom describe themselves in a desperate state because of irritable bowel syndrome, and 40% of Brits don't actually see it as a serious condition. Clearly, you've got a range of issues there, and accordingly, as promised, we're delighted now to be able to speak to world-class authority on the issue of irritable bowel syndrome and so on, consultant gastroenterologist extraordinaire, Professor Ingvar Bjarnason. Good morning, Professor Bjarnason. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. We've also got, of course, Samantha Jones. Samantha, I think you have experience of IBS as well from the point of view of the challenges it poses.
I do, yeah. Experience, good and bad, actually. You know, going on a roller coaster from, you know, wellness to complete bedbound and then wellness again. So I've had the whole spectrum of figuring out how to deal with it.
And is that the sort of issue from your own perspective, Professor Ingvar, about, you know, we just don't understand how much, you know, stress and problems these symptoms can actually cause?
Oh, God, yeah.
I think some of us do appreciate it. There are 4 million people in the UK that suffer from these symptoms that are variably diarrhea, constipation, bloating, abdominal discomfort, pain, shoulder pain, headaches, you name it. This is a constellation of symptoms that are very often described as unexplained symptoms by gastroenterologists because they don't understand what's happened. And as because of this, they're very reluctant to spend a lot of time with patients with regards to treatment, and that's quite unfortunate because there are coming through now very good treatments for IBS.
In our studio, we actually have Claire Margerison. Claire, would you like to just share your own? Because it's not so much irritable bowel syndrome, but I know you were quite fascinated when you knew that Professor Bjarnason was actually going to be with us this morning.
Yeah, I got diagnosed with celiac disease out of the blue about 2 years ago now. And it was, I was quite relatively asymptomatic, but it was mainly the malabsorption that was my problem. And I think people like completely associate digestive problems with just sort of the physical symptoms that you sort of, that you experience, but it's also how you absorb things and the fact that you can get severely anemic and severely malnourished from
absolutely
not being able to absorb these things, and then you have to take loads of vitamins and stuff, which is never fun, is it?
Not at all. Oh, you poor thing. I can totally feel your pain there as well.
Well, we like to feel that these phone links we can actually share and cure as a result of our phone. It's very good.
Yeah. We should break the taboo.
Again, Professor Ingvall, from your own perspective, are things improving? I mean, are we seeing an improvement in terms of probiotics, ways of actually coping with the gut? I mean, we hear a great deal about friendly bacteria, unfriendly bacteria and so on. Are we learning and beginning to change that? Or is it something which is a natural byproduct of our civilised life?
No, I think we're seeing a revolution now in the last 10 years. Both the dietary change is effective treatment, and now the standard of the trials with probiotics, especially with Simpro, are now showing that at least 50% of people improve very significantly with the probiotic. And if you combine the dietary approach, the probiotic approach, and very often a psychiatric input with CBT, to reduce anxiety, then we get wonderful results, and it's a way. We've come a long way from when I came to the UK in 1980, and the treatment was go home and be nice to your partner.
Mm. Yeah,
go and have a little rest at your mum's house. I think I have.
Yeah. Well, a lot of my friends actually, I know a substantial amount, like a good handful of people in third year actually, who have developed anxiety-related IBS this year just due to stress with university. And it adds to the stress because as soon as you're sort of, there's something wrong and you don't really know what's wrong and you don't know how to deal with it, it adds to that, and it means that you can't, you know, and obviously, like, relationships with food, especially, particularly, like, younger adults, particularly female younger adults, are already kind of quite tenuous. So as soon as you add in, like, oh, you can't eat this, or you need to restrict this, or you need to look at what you're eating so much, I mean, that was my problem. I found it really stressful having to cut gluten out and then also deal with the fact that I gained quite a lot of weight after diagnosis because I absorbed all the calories, and I think it
and
needs to be something to talk
food
about
as well.
Yeah, yeah,
like I was terrified to eat. I didn't know what, you know, what was going to set me off or what was good for me and what wasn't, and even though the FODMAP diet has helped me tremendously, it's not, you know, I'm really up for like getting to the bottom of everything and making sure that like I can actually get back to eating everything I can.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you can't have gluten, but you know, everything else, it would be great to get to the point where we have complete knowledge of our gut health.
Yeah.
You know, Simpro's helped me massively. I can't recommend it enough. It's just, it just did something. It worked. Week two, my body just suddenly went, oh, hello, it's woken up, you know. Everything started working properly. So that, in combination with the FODMAP diet, for me was amazing. So,
and I really don't think it helps that when you present the first time to your GP with these symptoms, they feel that they're quite vague, the symptoms, and they dismiss them.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you go repeatedly to the GP, and then all of a sudden, you're just so persistent that some tests are done. In your case, it led to a diagnosis of celiac disease, which in our books is quite a simple thing because it's a dietary change almost cures the disease.
Yeah.
But with IBS, it's very difficult. It's very different. But stress levels are, I think, are probably an order of magnitude greater. Anxieties are it's rampant, and your life is just made a complete misery.
We mentioned, of course, Simprove, of course, liquid food supplement with live and active bacteria. Quite significant that 50% of Brits who, again, have suffered through that whole process, you know, can be impacted from this. And it's worth looking for. It's difficult, obviously, in a very short interview like this to kind of dig deep into the whole sequence. But Samantha, from your own perspective, obviously an Ace Health blogger as well, how can people find out further information about, obviously, your own story with respect to this and indeed Simprove itself?
Well, you know, Simprove have got their own amazing Facebook community. It's like a closed group where everybody's sharing their stories, and that was a great help for me. I also run a thing called a Gut Health Empire where we're all chatting and supporting each other through the process. But also the IBS Network have been a great help. They've got an event on Saturday as well where that loads of my Gut Health Empire are going to that, and they're going to learn more about the research behind Simprove and all the things that they can do to sort of help themselves on the journey to getting back to full gut health. So there's a few options out there. Do all the above and let's all get involved and try and help each other. I think support's the main thing.
And Professor, is this something which is unique to Britain, or do we just is it the unique British aspect of we just like to talk about those kind of things that's at the fore of this? I mean, how do we compare with other European countries?
Oh, this is global disease or situation, and it's a real problem. In the developed countries, it's the prevalence is 20%. In developing countries, it's probably greater. It's just that people put up with the symptoms.
It's extraordinary. I mean, I think we've hopefully raised a couple of key things there. Just opening up to the rest of the team, anybody in the studio got any sort of final burning questions, Hannah?
No,
I think it's Clay, as you said the whole thing. We've got two final ones for you fine folk. First of all, Samantha Jones and Professor Ingvar Bjarnason, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Yes, of course.
Good, that's important. Cause,
you guys should come and join us online and come and find us. You know, let's all keep in contact and try and team up together. I think that's the main thing, is that we all put come together to shout louder.
It's important because you won't get so much help from your GP.
Mm. Yes.
So this is why the teamwork outside these areas is so important.
And of course, it's Simprove, SYMPROVE, in terms of the sort of details for Facebook connections and so on. So I think the next question, you've already answered it, but I take it you will both be able to return and keep us updated with how things are going in, you know, solving the problem of IBS and moving on to improve the quality of life.
Sure, we'd love to.
Absolutely.
A round of applause for Professor Ingvar Bjarnason and Samantha Jones. Yay!
Thank you.
Is only shining like it always does, but I never noticed it in the sky before, and you don't need to worry, 'cause I need your love, my friend.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
She's here, yay, absolutely. Welcome, Eva. And thanks to Eva's mother for giving you some exercise in the morning to ensure you had a nice little breakdown on that basis. Wonderful, that's great. And you made it for at least 28, 29 minutes.
That's it, it's worth it.
Exactly, it's marvellous stuff. There was, of course, a deep irony, because moving clearly from irritable bowel syndrome to William Sitwell and food might have
been beautiful.
You'd seem planned that whole thing through. Sadly, we can't do that with William. Why not, Claire?
He broke his phone. Well, he dropped his phone. Got run over by a nasty taxi.
True, exactly. It's almost those fated. You know,
nightmare.
Can't even say get well mobile phone. You know, it's just not good at all. However, the founder of Sci-Fi London is out and about, and hopefully, although he's on the mobile, he won't be dropping it.
Yeah. Hopefully.
It's critical, because Sci-Fi London, the country's premier film festival for science fiction, and more, of course, is approaching us very shortly. And that's what we'll be doing in terms of finding out various other sort of bits and pieces. Hannah, how's it going for yourself? I mean, you've now clocked up 1 hour, 33 minutes of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How's it been? Any regrets about sort of...
sort of line?
No, no regrets.
No, also feel, do you think Emily would be proud of you?
Yes.
I think she would. I think she'd be sitting there saying, that's my flatmate.
Is she listening?
I don't know.
She's probably asleep. She's probably ill.
Yeah, she's probably asleep.
You
would
thought she'd tune in for her friend.
Emily, if you're listening, thank you for waking up and tuning
in. Let's face it, we did wait until 9:30, you know, to actually sort of work through that process. And, of course, there's always a podcast, so you can listen to it whenever. Yeah, I don't intend to delete this, you know, so it will actually happen. That's important. Good. Okay, well, having put that to bed, so to speak, it's time for Men at Work. Be good, Johnny.
Johnny, don't you slip up or play the fool. Oh no, ma, oh no, da, I'll be your golden boy. I only like dreaming all the day long, where no one is screaming.
Hi, I'm Louis Savvy, director of Sci-Fi London Film Festival. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM.
It's the week of that slight hesitancy. That is Lambda trained. That's quality delivery. That, you know, it just in every sense of the word, you can tell that when he's not actually being Ernst Stavro Blofeld. Yes, we still love the photograph of Louis Savvy with actually as Ed Wellman, who's indirectly responsible for you being here today, Hannah. Really, had he not sent you in my direction for that quote?
Different line of time. This is Alex's number. Okay.
Is his number? Knows his name. Go for it. Louis Savvy, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Very well, thank you very much.
I think it was Sci-Fi Day when last year, of course, we were actively involved with your good self and Emma Tinson, who is actually in London herself these days. But
Doing job interviews.
They grow up so soon, Louis. It's unbelievable. Before you know where you have it, they're getting their sort of six-figure salaries. They're doing all their own. It's amazing. Anyway, like
exactly. And then they forget all about us.
Never. Well, never. Yes. We will not forget.
That words of Claire Margerison there. So, and we might hold her to that because clearly, you know, they're being recorded from that point of view. Yes.
Indeed.
I mean, without Louis Savvy, Sci-Fi London Film Festival, no Gareth Edwards making Godzilla.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
clearly,
exactly.
Louis makes it.
Actually, there was a lovely piece in, I think it was on thelondonist.com last week, which was a review and a post of the new trailer for Rogue One. Which part of it is shot in Canary Wharf. And then they put underneath about Sci-Fi London and the film he made for us called Factory Farm, which partly was also filmed in Canary Wharf. So it was a kind of lovely 360 little story about that. I'm really looking forward to it. The trailer looks amazing. So, always done good.
Well, exactly, and we salute him accordingly from that perspective. Of course, if you're wondering, well, surely that's natural for Mary Dancy, our London correspondent, to actually sort of find out Sci-Fi London. Couldn't take it. Did the show last night. Too much for her. Bless her heart. Lord knows. I think she's woken up though, Claire. So
yeah,
good news.
She's alive.
She's alive.
Like, pretty good.
Best we can ask for these days, Louis. Yeah. You know, if we're alive,
exactly.
That's fine. But we do have Eva MacDonald. Yay!
Who?
she is there. We've also got Tessa Leanne Snart, who's from the wonderful place called Glinton, just outside Peterborough, England. Yeah. Although I still think she sounds like an Essex girl. No, only kidding, because we do have a genuine Essex girl with Hannah Brown in the house. Yay, Hannah.
So there we are. Indeed.
So that's the sort of lineup. And the first question, Sci-Fi London, will there be a Sci-Fido in 2016?
Yes, there will. Oh. Yeah, May the 2nd. Monday, May the 2nd.
May the 2nd.
Very nice.
And it's happening in Hoxton Square, so right in the heart of, you know, beardy,
If you're going to get if you're going to get canines dressed up as the Starship Enterprise and more, this is Sci-Fido carried to the ultimate extent. In fact, it was probably the moment we realised Emma Tince was going to make it in the industry when she actually came along for Sci-Fi London.
Obviously.
Jodie, of course, the rest of us. And just in case you're looking at the pictures, yes, the dog is painted as a Yoda-like green though.
Aww.
Yeah. Oh, this is cute. All the great sort of teams will still be around there. Yeah, it's as you know, Louis, there's a significant fact insofar as you can get the midweek drivers and they're sort of ostensibly hard-bitten journalistic English graduates-to-be or indeed singing sort of choristers and so on, but at the end of the day, show them some fluffy animals.
Everybody loves the dog show.
Exactly.
It's our kryptonite.
Even allowing for cats who sometimes take part in Sci-Fi London as well.
Exactly.
Was it last year or the year before we had a cat turn up?
It was actually last year.
He said it was the dog. It was his superpower. It was the dog's superpower. Yeah. It was turning into a cat.
Exactly. It was.
How could we argue with that?
You can't.
Yeah. Anyway, the world hasn't completely taken leave of its senses as we approach 18 minutes to 19.
No,
to
we also have a film. We have also have a film going on as we've been doing for 15 years now. Yeah. But yeah. So and we've got a great lineup this year.
Well, doubtless. And we've also been asked by our regular correspondents, of course, Alan Moore and Professor Fiona... No, let me get this sorted out. Alan Stevens and Professor Fiona Moore. Very easily confused for obvious reasons. You know, neither of them are hairy or beardy or indeed sort of have written anything to do with Watchmen. But that's by the by.
Yeah.
But they are regular contributors to the show. And presumably they'll be there. Run through, because I suspect that Hannah and Eva and Tessa might not, and maybe even Claire, might not be familiar with the awesomeness, and I use the word quite deliberately, that is Sci-Fi London, the film festival.
Thank you. Well, I mean, as I said, we've got, every year we try and have, you know, a very good mix of stuff. The great thing about science fiction is it can encompass many stories and be as frivolous and silly or as cerebral as you want it to be. So, and as always, we've got that kind of mix. In the festival, we've got delighted. Our opening night film is a new British sci-fi thriller set in 1959, which stars Edmund Kingsley, who is the son of Sir Ben. And he's done a lot of TV and done a few little bit parts, but this is his first major role, and he's playing against a piece of hardware, basically stuck in a capsule in space, and he's in the film for about 70% of it, and he's absolutely fabulous. Really, really good, and it's a world premiere, and we'll have the cast and crew down there, so that'll be a really good night. We've also got the world premiere of a movie from Vertigo, who made Monsters with Gareth Edwards, called Kill Command, which is a really very cool robotic, battle and a big fight, and it's made by a guy called Steve Gomez. And he's a very, very well respected, very well known effects artist, and actually went to college with Gareth Edwards. So we've got all these sort of tie ups with him this year. And they were roommates at college, and Gareth decided to go and work for the BBC, and Steve decided to set his own company up doing VFX, and there we are. You know, Gareth has gone on to all these amazing things, and Steve is now on that same journey. It's a brilliant film, really, really. Very, very kind of Predator-esque in its feel, set in a forest with lots of very evil mechas running around. It's great.
Oh, those evil mechas.
Exactly. We've also got our closing night film is called The Call-Up, which is by the same guys who produced The Machine. I don't know if you remember The Machine, the
We are talking about the machine and wonderful thing, which was kind of around the same time as Ex Machina.
That's right.
It was released slightly earlier and a little bit more gruesome than Ex Machina, but still worth catching.
Well, the vibe this year, so everybody tells me, in technology is virtual reality. Everybody's into VR at the moment, including us.
This show is a virtual figment of our imaginations, collectively. That's what it's all about.
We've got a film called The Call Up as our closing night film, which is a fabulous British sci-fi movie about a group of the best gamers in the world, and they're all brought together to come and play this new virtual reality game. And they put on these amazing suits and headsets, and then obviously things go pretty badly wrong, and they all have to escape for their lives and so on. But it's really good fun, really good fun. And then we've got one more I just want to give you a quick plug for, which we gave our best short film, best feature film award to, is an American movie by a woman called Claire Cara, and it's her debut, and it is incredible. It's all about losing memory. So there's been a sort of worldwide epidemic, a neurological epidemic, and everyone's lost their short-term memory, the ability to remember things, for more than an hour. And the film opens with this couple, and they're in bed together, and they get up, and he turns around and says, "Who are you?" And she says, "I have no idea. Who are you?" And it goes from there. It's really, really interesting.
One heck of a what if, as they say, Sci-Fi London, where WF meets WTF, basically.
Where This Film. I tell my kids it's WTF stands for Where This Film.
Nice.
Or watch This Fun.
Speaking of which, I have to go for what to me has got to be the best titled movie ever in terms of the festival. And, I'm not going to give that sort of accolade lightly. The giant papier-mâché boulder is actually really, really heavy. To be precise,
it's quite important, yes.
This giant papier-mâché boulder is actually really, really heavy.
Yeah. It's fabulous. Much fun. It's a comedy, obviously.
Yeah. I'm thinking this is a Richard Fitzwilliams that's made for it. This giant papier-mâché boulder is actually really heavy. A slight aspect of Galaxy Quest coming in, perhaps? Or maybe
not? It's very akin to that, actually. Yeah. And we're really lucky, actually, because the director's coming over as well. He's flying over from Australia. I'm going to come and do a Q&A with us. And the story is very simple. It's these three guys going to the cinema. One of them doesn't like sci-fi. The other two do. They're trying to pick up girls. It's the usual, young men prowling around.
Testosterone.
And exactly, all of that. And they think being in a cinema, they can slide an arm around someone and that. And they basically get sucked in to their B-movie that they're watching, and they're trapped inside it. And everybody's starting to be taken over by these characters, except for this one guy who keeps going, "I know why it's not happening to me. I don't like science fiction."
We could have said that after week one, Claire.
You're all weird. You all believe this stuff, and I think it's all rubbish. That's why I can help save the world. And it's got sort of Kirk style fights in it with monsters in rubber costumes. Shirt gets ripped off.
Marvelous. There's nothing like a good fight with a shirt being ripped off. I find really
exactly.
Add to the quality.
It's kind of story-wise, it's sort of more towards Fifth Element, if you like. It's very kind of big, and Star Wars, it's very big space opera kind of story. But it has so many nods to, if you've seen any, sci-fi in the last 30 years, any of the sort of big titles, there's a nod to every single one of them pretty much in this film. It's really, really very silly, but great fun, really good fun.
And that's worth checking out. By the way, Ava, have you ever used papier-mâché? Is that
I did in school.
You did? Yeah. Right.
We used to make papier-mâché pigs. Pig
nice.
Bags.
Nice. Are they actually really heavy?
They were made out of balloons, so I don't really know.
Papier-mâché balloons and pigs. Did they fly? Sorry.
If you put the papier-mâché around the balloon, then you pop the balloon, don't you? So then you've got the body shape.
You're clearly an expert.
Because I did art and we made houses.
Yeah, right. And Hannah, did such things take place in Harwich, Essex, England?
Yes. Once in year one, we made a giant papier-mâché dragon.
Oh, wow.
Which got, yeah, that was great. Impressive.
There are a few shows which take you from randomly selecting students in Wimbledon to actually do live links with Lambda tutors through royal visits with Richard Fitzwilliams right the way through irritable bowel syndrome and papier-mâché balloons. But this is one of them. You know?
Exactly. But it's talking of being artistic and creative and making things, one of the big events we've got going on as part of the festival this year is called Hackstock, which is going on for 4 days. Over the bank holiday weekend. So if you're around, come to that and then do the dog show at the end of it. But we've got all the latest VR equipment coming. We've got all the latest kind of art projects that you can do inside virtual reality, if you like Google's Tilt Brush, where you can sculpt in 3D using an HTC Vive. We've got the Hieronymus Bosch experience, you know, where they've taken his paintings and brought them to life inside a virtual reality world. I mean, it's just... this stuff is incredible, and we've got lots of amazing panelists, and you can come, it's free, and just come down and hang out. And if you're into VR and you've made something, or you played with any of the software, bring your own gear as well.
We could even get our very own Lincoln University Oculus Rift people to sort of show that Oculus Rift.
Exactly. We'll have a Rift, we'll have gears, we'll have cardboards, we'll have all of it. And if you don't know what any of that means, that's why you should come.
So, precisely.
And as always, go to the website and you'll find some more information.
Well, I mean, I'm already there with respect to scifilondon.com. I'm already saying, we've already talked about coming down to do a Shakespearean thing on the 6th of May, which of course is the festival final day.
Yeah.
So, absolutely with that. And extraordinarily, I'm looking at even more of the special event, Sci-Fido Fog Show. It's even more amazing. Wonderful. You got fog and dogs. Fogs and dogs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's called a technical glitch.
Oh, I don't like being a pedant, but sometimes once you've marked one student essay, you think, is this really what you meant to say? That's still, it's all great.
And when I get off this phone conversation, I'll be on the phone to the guy who does the website. Oh. Just asking how many fogs he thinks are going to turn up.
Well, I mean, you know, in a John Carpenter-esque way, it could be very spooky if it was a very foggy day.
Exactly,
in London.
Exactly.
You know,
it'd be nice to have some fictional animals. You know, we're a sci-fi fantasy film festival, so, you know. And I actually spent the morning trying to convince my seven-year-old that there's an animal called a talcum.
Could easily happen.
He asked me what talcum powder was, and I said, oh, well, it comes from, it's a small furry animal, like a rabbit. And my two daughters started going, yeah, and then one of my kids drew a picture of it. At the moment, he's convinced that there's an animal called a talcum. If you look up what is a talcum animal on Google, there are some pictures of furry animals come up. So we were absolutely, you know, look, it's there, it's on Google, it must be real.
You're perpetuating the lie, I like it.
Yeah, exactly,
Parents are very difficult to bring into the world. We're currently watching the trailer for Sci-Fi London, and what are your thoughts, Hannah, I mean, as you watch this exciting scenario, 10 days of fantastic film?
It looks very interesting, there's a lot going on.
We must find the ultra-sex. I don't know what's
happening. Yes, exactly.
You know, where, what if, mate, WTF. And a polar bear that actually does monkey-esque Japanese jiu-jitsu.
What more could you want from life?
I'm just glad Alan Moore, Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore will be there. We'll hopefully be there as well. Louis, it's been absolutely brilliant, but she's done so well. I'm going to ask Eva to throw those last two questions at you because of those flying papier-mâché to me. I think that's the sequel already. Anyway, go, Eva.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's been a very peculiar one today.
Interesting, but yes, exactly. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Hopefully very soon, yeah.
Yay! A round of applause for Louis Savvy, the genius behind Sci-Fi London, without whom, it has to be said, no Phil Leonis, no Ilana Rain. So it's thanks to Louis Savvy and Sci-Fi London that two of our regular staples have sort of, you know, blossomed in their own way. So, there you go.
Hopefully they're making features.
I think so. Well, the Lady Killers. There you go.
Yeah.